Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. MoranTechnology.com. I'm Jerry Bain, and on this podcast, we feature a conversation with Bill Allison, Director of Campus Technology Services at the University of California, Berkeley. In our interview, he discusses Berkeley's experience of cost savings through ERP standardization. Thanks for joining us today, Bill. Appreciate it.
Hi, Jerry. Thanks.
You're giving a presentation entitled Breaking Through the Barriers to Enterprise Standardization Without All the Pain. Let's start by talking about what that pain is. What are some of the barriers to enterprise standardization?
Sure. In many institutions, part of the barrier is a historical one. So in the talk, I cover the introduction of the first payroll system that came to UC in 1976. And they were arguing about, you know, being able to standardize on monthly pay versus biweekly pay. And the company that was working on that was actually founded by Dave Duffield, who also founded PeopleSoft and has reappeared lately in Workday. So, you know, the history matters, and that burden of history is with us in the form of then there's a cost of changing systems that are the de facto standard. So that's one barrier. You know, we are universities. We're not corporations, and we do have some truly unique processes. For example, we hire rocket scientists at Berkeley. That is sort of the standard for something that is not the norm. So their resumes are 100 pages long. We may use people from other institutions as a part of the hiring process, all kinds of things like that. So those are sort of real barriers. There are also ones that are real as well, but that are more cultural factors. So, you know, often in the past, software was sold as no change required. In other words, the organization didn't need to change at all because software is infinitely malleable. So that has led to cultural barriers where people are not used to having to rethink the way they do business.
So what you're talking about is the idea that it is cheaper and more efficient to buy off-the-shelf software and use that across many campuses rather than try to customize everything to different campuses.
I'm not sure. Maybe we'd have to ask Brad Wheeler.
Right.
No, I'm just kidding. certainly, there is a lot of theory about that. So if you look at the history of what was going on in the business world, they went through, and Brad actually talked about this earlier, mm-hmm. this idea of you figure out what's core. We have a lot of discussions about what's most important for the university. Mm-hmm. That's a continuum. There isn't maybe a single right answer. But there's an interplay between process reengineering that happened in the business world in the late 1980s through the 1990s into the 2000s, and the feedback loop between the enterprise software, you know, because we're a small slice of the ERP pie in terms of customers. So a lot of process improvements occurred and were fed back. So if you are installing a new enterprise system that's an off-the-shelf type of, there's a business model that's embodied in that. And to the degree that we share commodity processes with industry, that delivers a process. So effectively, we get the advantage of that reengineering that's happened elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's the theory.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about what happened at Berkeley when you guys did your ERP rollout. What are some of the issues that you ran into, and how did you solve some of those issues regarding standardization?
We're still solving them. So, mm-hmm. You know, as I said in the talk, you know, 1976, that was really the first enterprise-wide system, although in those days, the software was designed, it wasn't so much off the shelf. There was a sort of a grassroots effort among people in administration to get an ERP launched. And the original premise of enterprise ERP type software like PeopleSoft, actually it's the premise of PeopleSoft at the time, was that you could bypass IT, same as we talk about with the cloud now, bypassing IT. Dave realized that you can bring in PeopleSoft on these little PCs and you can walk them right past your IT department, and they were selling direct to the business. So the business began a grassroots effort of getting ERP launched. And so some of the issue that we ran into is that getting into that in the mid-1990s, ERP software wasn't as mature. So that meant that the way we did customizations wasn't so well thought through at the time. And also that those process refinement that I talked about wasn't as involved there. So there's a process where you go through what's called fit gap. And what you do is you look at what are the requirements of my organization, and then what is the functionality delivered by the software, and you see where the gaps are. Today, ideally, I believe that when you accept this kind of software into the enterprise, you would probably change your organization rather than modify the code.
Now, why is that?
Because if you create a lot of modifications to the software, that's an ongoing burden that you have to maintain. Now, there's definitely cases when that's needed, but not all the time. People's jobs, the tasks that they do in their jobs, are a part of the identity of who they are. We're coming to a place now where people realize that change is the norm. So the tasks that I'm doing today, I don't expect them to be the same next year. But if you aren't looking at it through that prism or that lens, you may think that it's a reflection on you as an individual that, oh, this is unimportant now. And that isn't, you know, figuring out how to frame that is really important. That's an important barrier to overcome.
Sure. Now, just to play devil's advocate, is there a danger of becoming beholden to the software companies, saying this is what you get, change your organization? I mean, can that become a vicious circle?
Right. I think we need to have the competency in our organizations to really carefully look at where it would be appropriate and a good thing for us to change to save money. And that's true whether we're going to install a Qali package, whether we're going to use a software as a service vendor, or whether we're going to install a commercial off-the-shelf software.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there any advice you would have for other organizations going through some of these issues in terms of lessons learned?
Definitely. I think a lot of the lesson is that we have to do enough outreach and communication throughout the process so that all of the stakeholders are consulted. Berkeley did a study on funding and governance in 2006. One of the conclusions was that the units that operate the financial system or the HR system or any of these systems, they are represented better than, you know, some of the departments and other constituencies. So we're doing a lot now to do more outreach to pull people in. Higher ed has a judgmental culture. You know, people are afraid of making wrong decisions. One of the biggest things that we've learned is that leadership needs to be more agile, and we need to make faster and better decisions. So here, you know, our typical anti-pattern is that we try to reach a decision and it has to be the right one. We're very afraid of making a wrong decision. Mm-hmm. So then we have to do a lot of analysis and we try to gather a lot of information. And the end result is we take a long time, but we're still not comfortable that that's a good decision. So the decision is delayed so long that finally the project is running late and it's a snap decision at that point because they're just like, make a decision, you know, we'll take
it. And also the technology can change in that process. So even if it was supported by the evidence, it might be the wrong decision now.
That's right. The pace of change has accelerated rapidly, and it's on many dimensions. So the technology is changing very rapidly. The nature of the way the world does business with each other is changing. The demands of our students are evolving, and the pace is seemingly coupled to Moore's Law.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Definitely. I think that the big thing that we're working on now at Cal is looking at the staffing organization that we have today and then looking at what the model is for the future. And the way that we're talking about this is in demand, design, and delivery. So right now, delivery is the IT people who are delivering services, network engineers, system administrators, coders, people like that. So we have, I think, approximately 696 of those people. We have 42 people who work in demand management. That's sort of documenting what is the nature of the problem we're trying to solve, project managers and program managers. And we have 46 who work in the design of the solution. I jokingly refer to this as the ready, fire, aim organization. It's not that the people aren't smart. It's just that we don't have the right balance of the different aspects of delivering IT solutions today. So the reshaping of that organization involves balancing that so that we have more like a 25% demand management function, a 30% design function, and, you know, whatever.
Whatever the luck.
So what we want to be able to get to is a rebalancing of that distribution so that we have more like 25% of demand planning, 30% people working on a detailed design, and 45% working on the actual delivery of the solution.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Bill, for spending time with me and talking about these really important topics.
Great. Thanks. Thank you, Jerry.
Bill Allison, Director of Campus Technology Services at the University of California, Berkeley. EDUCAUSE podcasts are sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. MoranTechnology.com. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.